Lama asked if we would use this book, The Three Visions, by Norchin Kunchok Lundrup, for the Thursday night teaching for a while. And this is a teaching that Lama himself gave to us several years ago over a period of many months, long time, in great detail. And it's only because of that I agreed to attempt this, because I wrote copious notes from that period when Lama taught. So, in effect, I'll be sort of transmitting Lama's insights and commentaries, because these books are not always self-evident. They sometimes require a little bit of explanation to understand it fully. What I'd like to do tonight is to give a brief introduction about the text itself and the context of the text, so that it makes sense, so we can place it where this text arrived and why it's still being used after 500 years. First of all, I'd just like to point out that unfortunately, there are three books with the same title, Three Visions. So if people want to order their own copy to follow, you don't need to have your own book, but if you'd like to, make sure, that's why I'm showing you the cover, make sure you order. It's from Snow Lion, which has been bought out by Shambhala, but either Snow Lion or Shambhala website, you'll be able to find this book. But and please make sure.
And if you get it on Amazon and you get older copies, it's a blue, it's the same book, but this is an older version of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was
so
used.
Sometimes you get this one with the blue cover, and sometimes the new version that Michael has. They're both the same book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just one thing. If you want to order your own book, make sure it's this one, with the foreword by His Holiness Sakya Trichin. And also, before I forget, I'll just say that it's the tradition here in the center that when there's a special holy day, then the regular meditation practice is postponed and the special meditation happens, and that's the case for next Thursday. So there'll be a soak next Thursday. If you have the empowerment to come to the soak, you can come to the soak, but there won't be any class next Thursday. And that will also give people a chance to buy books if you want to. We do have one library copy that people can look at, but please don't take it home, please. And I have also ordered another one, and hopefully by the time 2 weeks goes by, we'll have a second copy.
Yeah.
So you don't absolutely have to buy this. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a copy just in that cupboard there. You see it there? Yeah. You can use it if you want to, if anyone wants to use that tonight. Yeah.
Why do we still use this book after 500 years? So in order to understand that, I'd like to just give a little bit of history to kind of put it in historical context, but also Dharma context. So as we know, Buddha walked on the earth 2,600 years ago. As Lama just said, he came to share his teachings, and he taught for about 45 years, which, if you think about it, it's a long time. That's a lot of teachings. So why so many teachings? Well, one reason is there's a lot of different people. There's a lot of different kinds of beings with a lot of different mental predispositions and personalities and maturity and so on and so forth. So the Buddha in his omniscience realized that and gave more than one path, because there's more than one type of person. And Lama just referenced that, you know, the three paths. What used to be called Hinayana, but that term has kind of gone by the wayside. And what I would call the foundation path is the basis for everything. It's also the basis for the other two paths. So the idea there is, if you're going to build a skyscraper, and there's one being built right next to where I live, so I know this. They spend months and months digging a hole in the ground and building the foundation and pouring concrete and rebar and making sure everything is really solid in the foundation. And then after months of doing that, suddenly the building, the stories go up really fast. Have you ever noticed that in a construction site? It's kind of amazing to see that. The idea being, of course, that if you don't have a strong foundation, you don't have a secure building. So it's similar in this sense that the foundation path that the Buddha taught is the basis for everything. Then, but some people have a different kind of proclivity or propensity in a certain direction, that they aren't just doing the path for themselves, but they also want to be able to help other people, because as Lama said, we all want to be happy. That's the basic game, is we don't want to suffer and we want to be happy. What good is it if I'm happy but everybody else is suffering? So there is another path which is sometimes called the Sutra path or the path of perfections. That actually is addressed to a different kind of person. Then the third path is the Vajrayana, or the diamond path, which is for very astute practitioners who realize that not only do they want to help other people, but everybody's suffering and we want to get enlightened fast so we can help people quickly. So those three paths were, in effect, taught to different audiences, sort of, historically speaking. Lama can correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong, okay? And traditionally, the Vajrayana, or the diamond path, was only taught to very few people, and some gurus only taught it to maybe even one student. So it was very limited, because it's a very powerful path, and if it falls in the wrong hands, there's, you know, things can go wrong, so to speak. It's like you wouldn't give matches to a child. The matches have to be used in the right context by a mature person. It's kind of like that. So the Vajrayana path was taught by the Buddha, but there were also other occasions where enlightened beings appeared to very advanced practitioners and gave them practices. There was a very advanced practitioner, a Mahasiddha, named Virupa, although in Tibet he's also known as Birwapa, so you will hear and see both of those names used. And he was born in East India. Now, we don't know exactly his birth date, but probably around the 800s, as far as I can figure out. If somebody has a better calendar, let me know. And he was a very serious monk, and he practiced and learned very well, and he became one of the abbots of a very famous Buddhist, it was a monastery, but it was a college called Nalanda. It was one of the big famous colleges in India. And he became a teacher and an abbot there, and he was widely respected. But because he had received the secret path and the secret empowerments, he practiced that at night in his room secretly. He taught in the college during the day, the Sutra path, and he practiced the Vajrayana path at night. And there's a lot of stories about this particular saint. He was, I think we would say he was a little bit of a character in a way. And without going into a lot of the details, he was practicing one night. He had been practicing for a long time and he really didn't see anything happening. And then he had some bad dreams that made him think that he was on the wrong path, that this wasn't for him. So he decided he was just going to give up. So he took his mala and he threw it in the latrine. Now, what happened was a goddess, a deity, appeared to him and said, "What are you doing? You know, go get your mala, clean it, put some perfume on it. I'm going to be your guide and I'm going to teach you and help you." And at that point, he realized that he had misread his dreams and the signs. So he practiced diligently at that point and became very, very advanced in his practice. And he received the teachings which are commonly known as the Lam Dre, which translate as the path with the result, which is kind of a funny title, and eventually we'll discover why it's called that. But commonly it's just called Lam Dre. But again, it was very secret, very special, and it was only given to very, very few people. Very quickly, though, relatively quickly, the teachings arrived in Tibet. There were four gurus between Virupa and the arrival of the Lam Dre in Tibet. There was almost nothing written down about this. It was an oral transmission. And when the writings are made about these kind of Vajrayana teachings, especially this one, they're very cryptic. They're very brief, very short, and very hard to understand. And so they need the commentary of the guru, otherwise you're just kind of lost. And I would like to just give you a sample of what I'm talking about here. Virupa wrote a comment or text called the Vajra Verses. But it's very brief. It's only 12 Tibetan folios, the pages, you know, the Tibetan books. I don't know, everybody's seen those. So it's not very long. It's very concise and very pithy and very difficult to decipher. So, just to give you a taste, this is a quotation from one of the pages. For sentient beings with the afflictions is the impure vision. For the meditator with transic absorption is the vision of experience. And for the ornamental wheel of the Sugata's inexhaustible enlightened body, voice, and mind is the pure vision. And that's it. Good night. So, the three visions are listed here. The impure vision, the vision of experience, and the pure vision. That's that verse that I just read is the summary of the whole path. But you have to have it fleshed out and unpacked, as they say, to understand it and to, even more importantly, to practice it. Because it's not enough to just read a book or hear a teaching and not practice. That's like getting a prescription from your doctor and putting it up on the shelf and saying, oh, isn't that nice medicine? And you don't take it, it doesn't do any good. So it's the instruction, yes, and also the practice. So this book, well, before I talk about this book, so as the Lam Dre lineage arrived in Tibet, it was given to one of the founders of the Sakya order, Sachin Kungpa Ningpo. And there were five founders, and he began the tradition of writing commentaries. He wrote actually 11 commentaries about the Lam Dre. And then in time, other commentaries were written. Some of his descendants wrote commentaries, and other people wrote commentaries. And as it was written down, different teachers kind of started organizing it. And without going into a lot of details about the organizational part of the Lam Dre, it came to a point where it was divided into two sections, the three vision section and the three tantra section. The three tantra section is the secret Vajrayana part of the Lam Dre. So we won't be going into that. The Lam Dre is actually a very, very extensive teaching. I've done it three times, and it was 7 days a week for a month. And I know in Tibet it was even longer than a month. It was like, what, 3 months or longer, right?
Tibet, 3 years.
3 years, okay. So, it's extensive. So anyway, it was divided into three, into two divisions, the three tantras and the three visions. So now we have the three visions, which is the not secret part of it, the sutric part of it. And this is it's an amazing book because it has everything in it about how to practice. And it gives you that foundation that we talked about earlier so that your high rise doesn't topple over at the first wind. It's solid material for building upon. So you really can't skip it. You can't just go on to the advanced stuff. It would be like jumping from kindergarten to a PhD or something. It just is too big of a gap, you know. So Many teachers made commentaries, and the lineage was passed century after century, and it was only the Sakyas that had the Lamdre, and it was particularly the Kun family, the royal family, that carry the lineage. And then we come to Norchin Kunchup Lundrup. It took me a long time to be able to say that name. He was born in 1497. So just to kind of put it in Western calendar, it's around Columbus time. And he passed away in 1557. And during that time, he wrote down the three vision texts that we now have. So this has been in use for 500 years. It's a time-tested bestseller. And what I'd like to read you is what His Holiness the Gongma Sakya Trichin wrote about this translation, which was made, it was published in 1985. It was translated by a Tibetan and an American. And this is what His Holiness said about this text. Excuse me. The master and lord of scholars, Norchin Kunchup Lundrup, is unequaled in authentically explaining the extraordinary tradition of the foremost father-son gurus of Sakya, who are the great owners of the entire teaching of the Buddha. His pleasing name is a streamer that waves and flutters right up to the summit of this world. The work known as The Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions, which is the full title of this, by the way, which is an explanation of the precious word of the path, including its result, the Lamdre, was composed by him. As this text completely includes the profound essence of all the teachings of the Victorious One, its subject matter is vast. Since the style of its writing is perfect in every way, it's easily understood by all, whether of superior or inferior intelligence. Therefore, this work has been rightly praised by many impartial scholars and wise men. This text, which is like a staircase for those fortunate practitioners who desire liberation, an excellent medicine that dispels the suffering of sentient beings, and a valuable article that even surpasses a wish-fulfilling jewel, was recently translated with pure intentions into English in America by the Sakya Acharya Losung Drakpa and the American practitioner Jay Goldberg. It is my belief and hope that by the translation of this work at this present time, all foreigners who are interested in the teaching of the Buddha and generally all the people of this world will obtain the new eye of wisdom that easily transverses the path to liberation, and that they will greatly increase their celebration of temporary and long-term peace and happiness. This was written by the head of the Sri Sakya order at the Amar Vajra residence in Rajpur, India, on July 18th, 1985. So that's a pretty good reference for this book, I would say. So, this text, I think it's important to point out something about this text, which actually, the first time I looked at it, I didn't really understand it, but now I do. It's, you know, there's many Buddhist texts, and you know, we read them and we go, oh, that was interesting, put it on the shelf, read another one. But the teachers, the great lamas and teachers have always mentioned that it's that the absorption of the Dharma is really a three-step process. Listening, contemplation, and meditation. So what we will be doing on Thursday evening is we will be reading this text, discussing it if people want to, and that constitutes the listening part of it. Dzongso Kenzi Rinpoche said one time that the Dharma is basically transmitted by speech. I'm not sure about getting enlightened just by reading books. So, the listening is the first step to just absorbing the teaching. And then the second step of contemplation, that's when we go home and we think about it, and we go over what was the teaching, what did they say, and that's when we sort of sort out what the teaching was, but also what the teaching wasn't. So we clarified it, and maybe we have some questions about that, and maybe we need to go back to the teacher and, or the text and sort that out. But we contemplate it in the sense that we clarify it and get it out, you know, really, really clear in our mind what the teaching is. And then the third step, which is easily skipped, the meditation, that's when we really meditate on the teaching and our clear understanding of it. And that's when it really goes in deep. And I like to think of it in Western psychology terms that that's when it goes into your unconscious. That's when it becomes really part of, you know, who you are without even thinking about it. You really integrate it. And that's where the change happens. Because if we didn't need to be changed, we'd already be enlightened, right? So we need to make some changes. And we all want to be happy, but we're not always happy. We don't want to suffer, but we do suffer. So that third step of the meditation really takes it deep and solidifies it into our being, into our consciousness. And those three steps, again, you don't get to skip any. And often we don't do the second and the third step, but this book is, this is my opinion, that one of the reasons it's lasted 500 years is it'll give us all three of these steps. This is actually a meditation manual. And it's structured in such a way that it's written where the topic of the teaching is given in the beginning of the chapter or the beginning of the section. The teaching is given on the topic. And then there's a whole host of scriptural references to validate it, to show that Nochen Kunsho Lundorp wasn't just making this up. He wasn't just pulling it out of the air because he felt like it. He didn't have anything to do that day, so he wrote it. But he references the scriptural basis for it so we can be sure it's authentic. And there's a lot of them in here. And because we Westerners tend to not have read a lot of sutras and scriptures, it's a really good backfill for us to understand, well, what did the Buddha say and what did the great sages comment about? And it gives a validity to the arguments that wouldn't be there otherwise. And then the third part of the teaching or the chapter is the actual meditation of it. So it's really compact in that sense. It really gives us everything we need for this foundation that we so badly need. And if we then want to go on to the Vajrayana path, then we can be sure that we have something to base it on, and we won't get confused because it can be complicated and deep, and we don't want to get confused because everything depends on this, our happiness. And if we are doing the Bodhisattva path of helping others, then others also depend on us. Specifically, all sentient beings, in the sense that they've all been our mothers at one time or another. And so, by following a text like this, we can be sure that we're getting the real deal. And that's nothing against any other text or any other teacher, but there's a reason why this has lasted 500 years, and Sankhya Trichin says, I hope everybody gets a chance to read this and study it. So, it takes a while to go through it. We'll be doing this for many weeks. But I think it's well worth it. For one, because it's a classic text. For two, because Lama Jampa has already given the commentary, and I've taken the notes, and those will be shared. And it's something that you can go back and you can look at again and again, because it covers all of the foundational practices in Buddhism that lead to the higher practices. So, what else do I want to say about this? Are there any comments that any people want to make at this point? I don't have to be the only person that talks. Lama? Uh-huh. Linda? Karen?
I just remember that us old students went through the three visions at least three times, and with other books in between, of course. And every time, it's as if the teaching has changed and become more profound because we have more understanding, having tried practicing certain things and asking questions and getting somewhere with the answers. So it's amazing that you get out of it what you put into it. And if you read it three times, then you'll really have your agenda full of practices that you can use to become a bodhisattva. It's really an extraordinarily well presented path in this book series.
Quick question. Bodhisattva, what does that translate to?
It can you translate it in different ways, but it's a hero with the enlightened thought to benefit all beings. Someone who has taken the vow to benefit other beings. Just what I said earlier, that it's, what good is it if I'm happy and everybody else is suffering? So, one of the paths is to make the commitment that I'm going to become enlightened because I don't have the power to help anybody right now. I mean, you're suffering, what can I do? But a Buddha can. So the idea is, I will become a Buddha, I will become enlightened, with the motivation that I'm going to do it to help other beings, not just for my own backside. And the Bodhisattva, do we have an English term for that that's really concise?
Bodhi is enlightenment, and Sattva is person, so it's a...
Great compassion?
It's compassion, but it's wisdom. It's compassion and wisdom, actually.
To go to deeper, Buddha saying, if you like really freedom, through the teaching. Mm-hmm. Buddha cannot take other things. Buddha cannot wash other things. Okay?
Oh, Buddha can't wash away your sins, other person's sins.
Just showing the karma. And Buddha cannot take other sentient beings also suffering. Mm-hmm. Buddha enlightened. His wisdom cannot transfer to Derek. What shall I do? Through the teaching, true reality, true, you can find the freedom. Mm-hmm. This is scientific.
Some of these terms are hard to translate because the meaning is vast, and so it's actually easier to not translate them. So, karma, bodhisattva, shunyata is emptiness, but what is emptiness? So sometimes the terms are just left, and then the explanation is given, you know, because the meanings, there's lots of different levels to them.
The I think like what Lamo was saying, the Buddha attained enlightenment and taught that path. That's his gift to sentient beings. Still, sentient beings have to travel on the path and practice, like Michael was saying. Having the teachings is only one thing, but practicing, then you come to realize that, you know, yeah, the, what can you say? You come to realize, and bodhisattva works for the benefit of sentient beings, like a Buddha. But they come back, like I would say, that our lamas and teachers are like bodhisattvas because they've come and they're giving us the teachings, you know, sort of thing. They're giving us a path to enlightenment, you know, and explaining it day by day. Month by month, year by year, tirelessly, right?
Many people study. Mm-hmm. It comes more developing. Mm-hmm. You can see more.
Yeah. Without that, we would be lost because we're, you know, we need a guide. That's because us beings, we need that support. Mm-hmm. And here, like, Lamala is giving, like, Michael a chance to teach, which is wonderful because he's done the Lamdre and he's actually explaining it really well.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. It's really helpful. Yeah, it's a gift.
You take 3 times, right, Lamdre?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Mm. Not easy.
Not easy at all.
And it's very rare to even get it because it doesn't happen every day. Yeah. You know, it's first of all, logistically, it's a big thing to have hundreds and hundreds of people going and being in a place for a month, you know, or more. But also just there's not very many authorized teachers that can actually give the laundry. There's very few.
Or translators.
Or translators, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I've just about finished, but just to give you just an idea of what is covered in this particular text, there are what are called the preliminaries, which include refuge, which we did, the refuge prayer. There's an explanation of what is refuge, what are the different kinds of refuge and explanations, so they really understand refuge, because that's the first step of being a Buddhist, really. And we repeat that step every time we do a practice. So if you want to know what refuge is, come to the class and we'll go through it. And there's a very extensive explanation. There's also an explanation about faith. One of the things that I think is interesting about what the Buddha taught is he said that he didn't want his students to take his word on faith alone, blind faith, just because he said it. He said, if you think you're giving me respect by believing what I'm saying just because I said it, that's a mistake. This is to be practiced. I want you to go and practice it and find out, does it work for you or not? You don't have to take my word for it. That's one kind of faith. And there's other kinds of faith. And faith gets built with experience. After you had an experience that's positive about something, then you tend to believe in it, right? So there's a discussion about faith in here, which I think is really helpful, because the Buddhist idea of faith is a little more extensive than what I was brought up with in terms of what faith is. Then it gets into the actual the different ways that we behave that are not skillful and identifying them, and there's lots of them. And then the antidotes to that, like, okay, if we shouldn't do that, what should we do and how to make that transition? So there's lots of sections in the book around that topic about unskillful action and skillful action. And then there's another section about something the Lama mentioned earlier, which is what's called the precious human rebirth, this incredible opportunity that we have that we really don't even know that we have. And the precious human rebirth is a lot more than just being born as a human. There's actually 18 factors that have to line up before you can really say, yes, I have precious human rebirth. For example, you have to be born in a country where there was Dharma. If you're born in a country where there's no Dharma, how can you practice it? So there's a discussion about the precious human rebirth and how difficult, rare, and precious it is, and how brief it is. It just comes and goes in a flash of lightning. Relatively speaking, it's brief, you know. And therefore, if it's precious and it's brief, well, what are we doing wasting our time with silliness? Why don't we get down and do, as Lama said, the effort, the right effort? We need to make the effort, and it is effort. Let's be honest, it takes effort to study and meditate and do the practices. But what else is worth it? Nothing else is worth it. So it's an extensive description of the preciousness of this incredible opportunity that we have, especially coming across a text like this, which just lays it out for us. And then how to be skillful in our day, because we have jobs, we have families, we have lives, we're busy. How can we practice when we have all this stuff going on in our lives? Well, this will tell us how to do that. In other words, how to integrate the teachings into your daily life. Dharma is not just when you come to the Dharma Center and sit on a cushion. Dharma is your life. And it's not always easy to make that transition, but yeah, my boss is a jerk, you know. Do I really have to love him? You know, Lama mentioned that. You know, you go to work and you see your boss in a different point of view. He's still a jerk maybe, but you have a different view. And that becomes your practice. And so on. And so these examples about integrating the practice into our daily life in a skillful way, what's called skillful means. And then going from the sort of, you know, behavior part of it into the mind part of it is, well, what state is our mind in? Are we in a loving kindness state of mind? Are we in an altruistic state of mind? Do we really have other people's benefit in our mind? You know, we've made this vow to be bodhisattvas and to work for other people. Do we really have that in our practice? And so how to do that, and how to make the second level path, the great perfection path, be really part of our daily life, in our minds. Because in Buddhism, it's all your mind. You know, your mind and your motivation determines your speech and your action. So we really want to focus on what kind of mental state we're in, and turning that away from non-virtue and towards virtue. And then, so this covers the first two visions, really, the impure vision and the vision of experience. The impure vision is basically what most of us have. We're just kind of lost in samsara, going round and round. Samsara meaning cyclical existence, the rebirth again and again and again, suffering again and again and again. The vision of experience is then when we get on the path and the yogic experience of practicing, we start to change the way we look at things. The bad boss gradually becomes an object of our compassion and a chance for us to practice. Geshe Thasi Namgyal, the founder of this center 50 years ago, I remember one time he gave a talk and he said, you know, really advanced practitioners, if they find somebody that really irritates them a lot, they give them gifts so they'll hang around and continue to irritate them so they can practice patience. I'm not sure I'm at that level yet, but the yogic experience, you start to change your regular vision into the vision of experience. And then the pure vision, of course, is what Buddha has. So as an enticement to continue, at the end of the book, Nochen Kunchuk Lundrup makes some reference to, well, what's it like to be enlightened? Pretty nice. You might want to continue on in this and into the Vajrayana path. And he sort of kind of whets our appetite to go on to what would then be the Three Tantras, which is a different book and another level of things. So this, just to repeat, is a tremendous aid in creating a foundation for spiritual development, which leads eventually to full and complete enlightenment. What else do you want? So that's really, I think, what all I want to do tonight. I don't want to start reading the book tonight because we're going to skip a week and people want to have a chance to maybe get their own book if they want. So if you want to come back, if you want to invite other people, it's open. Anybody can come. And it'll be Thursday evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
And we always end with the dedication. So we'll be doing that every night too.